Support for KBOO comes from our listeners. If you value independent media, go to kboo.fm and click donate. And thank you for supporting your community radio station.
In more than a decade, Republicans back in Washington think that they found the right candidate in Monica Webby, a children's brain surgeon who's raised more than $1 million and put her early opposition to President Barack Obama's health care law at the center of her campaign. Well, of course she has. And she probably has got no idea what she's doing up there at the podium. But she does know one thing, and that is that there are millions of dollars behind her. The Koch brothers and all the rest are standing up for little Monica and her run for power. This has been Air Cascadia for Monday, April 21st, 2014. Joe Clement engineered the show today. Thanks for that, Joe. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand. Thanks for listening. And be sure to stay tuned. Locus Focus coming right up.
Our jails and prisons have become overcrowded with people suffering from mental illness. Many people incarcerated are also addicted to drugs and alcohol. What treatment is being provided? Tune in to Prison Pipeline April 14th to hear Doyle Smith of Dual Diagnosis Anonymous of Oregon talk about the need for treatment programs in our jails and prisons. That's Prison Pipeline April 14th at 6:30 p.m.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. Up next is Locus Focus. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Artemis Foods, Portland's local, organic, and sustainable catering company since 2001. Special events, corporate and wedding catering with seasonal menus and service supported by sustainable business operations. Artemis offers full service and drop-off catering. Information at artemisfoods.com.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Wilkin & Company, PC, Certified Public Accountants, helping businesses, individuals, and nonprofit organizations make financial decisions based on their personal values since 1987. Wilkin & Company is located at 2435 Southwest 5th Avenue in Portland. Information at 503-225-1359 or WilkinCPAS.com.
Good morning and welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. In a few weeks, Portland voters will be voting on a measure that would remove Portland's bureaus of water and environmental services from city control and have them run instead by a new elected board. Proponents claim that this measure will cut Portland water rates and provide transparency in an agency they believe is out of control. But opponents of the measure see it as a power grab by the city's largest industrial water users and corporate polluters. They say that the real intention is to roll back the city's most important environmental initiatives. This morning, we talked with two opponents to Measure 26156, Bob Salinger, who's with the Audubon Society of Portland, and Mike Houck with Urban Green Spaces Institute. Bob and Mike, welcome back to Locus Focus.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
So as always, it's good to have you guys and get your perspective. And this is actually the second time that we are doing a go-around about this ballot measure, which was not a ballot measure. And I think it was just Bob that was on last time talking about this, as I recall. So let's talk a little bit about why you are here today. And the last time we talked about this, there was a signature gathering initiative that hadn't gotten on the ballot. It's gotten on the ballot since then. We're actually going to be voting on it in a couple of weeks. So what has brought you guys, well, Bob, you're
when this is this time of year when you're usually around taking care of peregrine falcons and making sure that they don't fall out of their nests. And right. Mike has a million other things that he's doing. But why are you focusing on this initiative?
Well, I wish I was out working on peregrine falcons rather than this initiative. But I did make the ballot. And so in May, voters are going to have to decide whether they want to transfer the Bureau of Environmental Services, the city's environmental bureau, and the Water Bureau, and the $15 billion worth of public assets that they control to this new board that's being proposed. And we view this as one of the biggest threats to our environment and our community to come down the pike in a long time. Basically, we see this as a corporate takeover of our public utilities. And the folks behind it are really a who's who of people that have tried to manipulate our government to eliminate environmental programs. Over the years, they haven't been successful. Now they're coming back and using the initiative process to do the same thing. So it's real important that folks understand what's at stake here.
So who are these folks?
It's an interesting group of people. The folks behind this want you to believe that this is a populist uprising. But in fact, not a single group, not a single community group has come on and supported it since it was announced more than 7 months ago.
Except for Friends of the Reservoir.
Well, Friends of the Reservoir actually worked on creating it, but not a single group has signed on to it since it was announced, which is a pretty incredible record. On the opposite side, on our side, literally dozens of groups, community groups, environmental groups, social justice groups, labor, even businesses now are coming on and opposing it, literally dozens and dozens of groups. And the reason is that folks have taken a look at this and realized that it's a really bad initiative. It's poorly written. It's confusing. It's destructive. It doesn't solve the problems that people are concerned about. But it does transfer power to a very troubling group of people. And so, yeah, let's get to who's behind it. First of all, there's about 8 corporate backers that are funding this. One in particular, Siltronic, has put in over $80,000 to fund this initiative. Again, over $80,000. We haven't seen that kind of money spent on local elections before. That's really pretty astounding. They're a Superfund polluter that has fought river regulations, that's really been a bad actor.
Now,
on the
are
river.
They a locally owned company?
No, they're owned in Germany. And they're a company that's gotten millions of dollars in subsidies to deliver jobs that they've turned around and not delivered. Again, they fought environmental regulations on the river. They're a Superfund polluter. They're the primary sponsor of this. Another backer is Harry Merlo. Harry Merlo, people remember, made his money clear-cutting the ancient forests of the Pacific Northwest. He's the number 2 backer. One of the lead proponents, Kent Crayford, is the former executive director of the Industrial Water Users Coalition. Those are the biggest water users in the city. John DiLorenzo, another major backer of this, is a guy who fought campaign finance reform. He's the one that went to the Supreme Court and fought successfully to eliminate campaign finance reform to make sure that unlimited money could flow into our elections. He was basically Citizens United in Oregon before that passed the Supreme Court.
He's also done, as I recall, and I'm trying to remember what they were, a few other initiatives that would probably have progressives screaming.
Oh, yeah. He has an incredible track record that people should be aware of, especially if you're concerned about water. For example, he went to the Oregon legislature as a lobbyist and tried to pass a bill to transfer the cost of Superfund from polluters to taxpayers. He went to the Oregon legislature and tried to pass something called the Oregon Oasis Project to give Columbia River water to big agribusiness in eastern Oregon at absolute bargain basement rates. The Oregonian talked about it as one of the biggest water grabs in Oregon's history. He's also represented the forest industry, pesticide manufacturers. Currently, he's representing landlords that are fighting anti-discrimination policies. So he really has an incredible track record. And then one more I just want to raise, who just came in, he just appeared, a guy named Andrew Miller. Andrew Miller is works for Stimson Lumber. He's the head of Stimson Lumber, and he started something called the Oregon Transformation Project. For folks that haven't heard of the Oregon Transformation Project, it's a PAC that is basically focused on shifting Oregon's elections to the far right. He has given millions and millions of dollars to basically fund right-wing candidates. He was the guy that funded the takeover of Clackamas County.
So this guy is somebody you should actually watch out for, because
every single one of them.
So when I was joking to you outside before we went on about if the Koch brothers were involved, well, not the Koch brothers per se, but it sounds like we've got our own personal Koch brothers here.
Damn close.
So the question that people might raise is that it's not exactly like the Water Bureau is a blameless agency of the city. There's lots of reasons to criticize them for. I'm not sure that I would focus on the big criticisms that the Oregonian keeps throwing up, like the Water House and the Rose Festival headquarters, because behind that, I think, is a thinly veiled attack on the fact that they also bought land above the Selwood Bridge on the west side of the river for basically habitat protection, and have done things that you guys have been advocating for a long time. But people have a lot of justifiable criticisms of the Water Bureau, and perhaps the one that is most vehement is about the expense and the environmental consequences of covering the reservoirs. And the opponents of the proponents of this initiative got their start fighting to keep the reservoirs at Mount Tabor uncovered. So why should people be ignoring the concerns, let's say, of the fact that the Water Bureau is out of range? Some people think it's just kind of out of control. And why would you say that there shouldn't be some kinds of changes in the way that of governance so that the Water Bureau and perhaps BES, Bureau of Environmental Services, have better management?
Well, I'm not here to defend the Water Bureau, frankly. My biggest concern, and we can get into specifics about the Water Bureau, but I'm here primarily, and as you know, I've been here over many years talking about some of the progress we've made with the City of Portland, specifically with the Bureau of Environmental Services, which at one point when I got involved working with the city 30-some years ago, was a sewer bureau. And people still inappropriately refer to it as a sewer bureau. It's not a sewer bureau. It is now, thankfully, a watershed health bureau. And what we have managed to do over the years is to shift the mission, which is entirely within the city charter, by the way, of that bureau to be a more holistic watershed health bureau, which is concerned about endangered species, about recovering salmon, and dealing with watershed health, not just putting your sewage into a pipe and shipping it off to the Columbia Boulevard Treatment Center. And this lawsuit, initially, and now the ballot measure is all about rolling back all of those environmental programs that we've developed over the last 30 years. That's why I'm here. And the proponents have been very explicit, Kent in particular, about doing away with programs such as one you referenced. I think you referenced it with regard to the Water Bureau. It was really the Bureau of Environmental Services acquired a forested area adjacent to, actually then part of, Riverview Cemetery for a number of reasons. The most important one from BES or Bureau of Environmental Services perspective was to protect those fragile headwaters that deliver water directly into the Willamette River that we spent $1.44 billion to clean up with a big pipe. What people don't realize is that the Bureau of Environmental Services were only one partner in that effort. Metro, with its regional bond measure to acquire natural areas, and Portland Parks and Recreation all participated in that process. So it's inaccurate to say that BES bought that land. They were a partner for watershed health purposes.
And actually, it seems like most of the money came from the Vaughn measure. Am I correct about that?
I don't remember the exact percentages, but I think that's correct, yes.
Well, I think there's another interesting thing, and I made that same mistake myself, which is rolling together what BES does, what Bureau of Environmental Services does, and what the Water Bureau does. And the fact is that the Water Bureau is the agency that has made people angry, going back to the horrible computerized billing system under Eric Sten. And it was one blunder after another. And when we're off the air, I could make some comments about some of my own interactions with staff at the Water Bureau. But Bureau of Environmental Services, which I think has not been as much in the focus, doesn't get as much publicity, and yet is quietly doing things that a lot of Portlanders like. I wonder about the political savvy of the proponents of this measure to roll those two bureaus together.
Well, I think that's what's so sad about this measure is the Friends of the Reservoirs, which were fighting to protect the reservoirs, fighting to keep them from being covered, have allowed their cause to be co-opted by this cast of characters. The fact is, this initiative will do absolutely nothing to prevent the reservoirs from being covered. It has no impact on the reservoirs whatsoever. What it does do is allows a bunch of bad actors, some of the worst corporate entities out there in the state, to seize upon frustration that's accumulated over the years, and I appreciate why that frustration has accumulated, and use that for a much larger and more insidious objective. And again, these are groups that have fought our environmental programs year in and year out. Mike's fought them, I've fought them, as they've tried to roll back environmental protections that our community has strongly supported. And what they've done is they've taken this frustration and they've used it to basically attack a much broader swath of things. It's a classic Tea Party tactic, really. It's a classic right-wing tactic of using frustration with government and channeling it toward attacking things that people actually care about. And that's what the community really needs to be aware of. I understand there are frustrations with the Water Bureau, but the way to solve those is not to turn these two bureaus, and especially our Environmental Bureau, over to a new system that makes it much more vulnerable to corporate takeover. And folks will say, well, you know, why is one system more vulnerable than another? These folks wouldn't be advocating and wouldn't be pumping in literally, in the case of Siltronic, $80,000 into this if they thought their interests weren't going to be served by the outcome. And they've given us a roadmap of what they want to do. The same cast of characters brought a lawsuit a couple of years ago against the city. It hasn't been resolved yet, where they attacked literally every single significant environmental program at the Bureau of Environmental Services, calling them illegal, calling them pet projects, saying that they were outside the charter. They're, as Mike said, they're absolutely not outside the charter. But what did they attack? They said the Superfund program was illegal. The regulations to protect our river on the Willamette River to hold industrial developers responsible when they impact habitat were illegal. That programs to acquire land like the one that Mike talked about or the Johnson Creek floodplain restorations are illegal. The green infrastructure programs like planting trees and eco-roos and green streets, the things that have greened our neighborhoods and made them more livable and more healthy, are illegal. They've given us a literal roadmap of the things they would like to eliminate. And why will this new commission be more vulnerable? It's much, much easier for a big moneyed interest to take over something like a unpaid, obscure commission like the one that's being proposed than it is to take over city government. These elections will happen in off years. The candidates are going to be unpaid. Under the city charter, they can't even hold a job while they're in office. All it would take
Wait, they can't hold a job while they're in
office? The city charter prohibits any elected official in Portland from holding a job. And the proponents of this initiative failed to amend that portion of the charter. So it turns out that not only are they unpaid, but they also can't hold a job.
So they better be independently wealthy.
They better be independently wealthy or well-funded by, say, some corporate backer like Siltronic. No, I mean seriously, this is real stuff, folks. And all it would take is $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 into these candidates' pockets to very easily sway an election. Because most people are going to be running. It's going to be obscure. People don't pay attention. And with a little bit of money, it's very easy to win.
Well, and to add on to that, there is also a prohibition in the measure of serving on this elected body if you have basically if you have any experience whatsoever with the Water Bureau or with the Bureau of Environmental Services.
Well, they say if you're funded or you lobby. So you guys, you guys are, I understand, are the two largest recipients of city funding of anybody.
You're right.
Actually, I want to kind of clarify that. But before I do that, I want to, who are these big, you know, these major lobbyists that we have here right now? We're talking this morning with Mike Houck, who is the founder of Urban Green Spaces Institute and formerly with the Audubon Society of Portland, and Bob Salinger, who's a conservation director for the Audubon Society of Portland and the shepherd of peregrine falcons in the spring as they nest and roost on the bridges of Portland.
I like that, peregrine falcon shepherd. I never really thought of myself that way. yeah, no, Mike's correct. They make a big deal, the proponents make a big deal out of the strict conflict of interest provisions in this. They're actually pretty bizarre and they're probably not constitutional. Basically, anybody that works for a company that has a contract with the Bureau of Environmental Services or the Water Bureau is prohibited from running while they work for those companies and for several years afterwards. Now, these are big bureaus that have all kinds of contracts. So, for example, they have contracts with Fred Meyer, Oregon Health Sciences University, the American Red Cross, Home Depot, Miller Paint, the Columbia Corridor Association, St. Andrew's Catholic Church, Home Depot, Legacy Emmanuel Hospital, the Friends of Trees. Anybody that works for those is prohibited from running for these new commissions. If you are a bagger at Fred Meyer, if you're a cashier at Fred Meyer, you are prohibited from running because you have a conflict of interest. Notably, if you're a corporate polluter, somebody who's been fined, a big corporate entity with a massive amount of regulation on your shoulders, you can run. These folks weren't concerned about corporate influence. They weren't concerned about corporate money. Again, John DiLorenzo, who's a big backer of this, is the guy that made it legal in Oregon to give unlimited donations. But if you're a bagger at Fred Meyer, you can't run. So it shows a little bit about where their concerns really lie.
Well, I also I want to do sort of deal with the fact that I heard Floyd Jones the other day on, I think it was a debate on Think Out Loud, where she was accusing both the Audubon Society and Urban Green Spaces of being large recipients of city largesse. And that, yeah, because when the questioner was asking about the environmental groups that are opposing the measure, she was quick to point out that these people are, in fact, basically mouthpieces for the city because they receive so much money. So I wanted to kind of, first of all, clarify that. I mean, how much of your budgets come from the city of Portland?
Our budget, 0.2%, comes from the city. It's not surprising that Kent and his allies would get all apoplectic about environmental groups working with the city. We're groups that work with the city and the community to do watershed enhancement projects. I'm actually really proud of that fact. These are really important projects. They're strongly supported by the community. They're completely transparent. We get people out there in the environment, planting trees, restoring natural areas, making ratepayer dollars go much, much further than they could possibly go. And the community has come out time and time again and supported them. Kent's clients, on the other hand, get millions and millions of dollars in public subsidies. And in fact, Kent's own airline got millions of dollars in public subsidies.
What's his airline?
He had an airline, Seaport or something like that, for years. They have no problem with giant corporate welfare. They have a huge problem when environmental groups partner with the city, get grants, and do community projects. Again, it tells you what they're all about. But just to address the Audubon issue, because Kent likes to talk about Audubon getting $43,000 to count birds. Actually, that's not true. What we got was the city came to us and said, we do a lot of monitoring of the watershed. We want to involve the community more, and we also want to see if we can do it for less money. So would you be willing to take this contract? We looked at it. We said, you know what? We'll take it. We'll do about four times more work, and we'll do it for a fraction of the cost. And so that $43,000 that Kent talks about actually covers 6 years, 10 sites, multiple surveys. And we agreed in the contract that we would match the city's funding more than one-to-one. So we actually pay more than the city does to do this work. It's a loser for us in terms of cost. But it's important to us to get the community out there, helping monitor the health of the watershed, getting them involved, and making sure that the work that the city is doing actually is having the impacts that we want it to have.
The other thing is, as I did hear him use the word count birds, as if that's a demeaning thing to be doing. So what's the difference between counting birds and what you're actually doing?
Well, what the city does is it monitors all kinds of different metrics, water quality, water quantity, macroinvertebrates, water temperature, wildlife, and it puts all of those things together to determine whether the work it's doing in the watersheds, the watershed restoration work, is actually having the impacts that we want to have, that it's actually working, that it's effective, that ratepayer money is being used well. We took on that one small piece of monitoring birds. Again, it's a six-year contract, so we get paid about $6,000-$7,000 a year. We put in an equal amount or more every year, and we get people out there doing this work. And again, it represents about 0.2% of our budget. The last thing I would say about Audubon is we put over $1 million a year into the watershed. We spend over $1 million doing restoration projects, managing part of Forest Park, running the wildlife hospital and so on, doing kids' education classes. So we get about $6,000-$7,000 from the city. We pump in about $1 million. I think that's a pretty good deal.
And Mike, what about your?
Oh, I got a huge grant from the Watershed Education Program to draw attention to Oaks Bottom Wildlife Refuge. You know, I owe no apologies to Floyd or to anybody else.
So you did get a huge grant from them?
Oh, yeah. It was, I think, $10,000.
Oh, that's a huge grant. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. At any rate, it was focused on Oaks Bottom Wildlife Refuge. My environmental conservation record will stand on its own, I believe. I've been involved. In fact, I also will not apologize for being a so-called insider at City Hall. The fact of the matter is both Bob and I will kick City Hall's butt if we need to. On the other hand, we'll work with them when we think we're going to achieve better environmental outcomes for the city of Portland. In fact, I did tell Floyd to take my name off. She had me contracting with the Water Bureau at one point. I've never received a penny from the Portland Water Bureau.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really important, again, for the community to take a step back and think about what we're talking about here, because it's easy to demagogue these issues and wrap them all up with the reservoirs and other mistakes that have been made, like the water house, and throw all these things in the same hopper and say they're all bad. But I think when folks stop and think about it and think about these programs that get people involved with their communities, with their government, with protecting their own watersheds, planting trees, restoring natural areas, removing invasive species, taking the limited amount of ratepayer money and leveraging it many, many times over to improve the health of our communities and our environment, time and time again, the communities come out and said, these are really important. Don't cut them. In fact, you need to increase them. They're also cost effective, too, and that's a really important thing to consider. Because the city is doing these green infrastructure projects now, it's saving tremendous money on replacing our 100-year-old sewer system. The sewer system basically has a 100-year lifespan, so we have this very old, archaic sewer system that's starting to fail. And what the city has found is if you simply go the sort of traditional route of replacing sewer pipes, it's very, very expensive. But if you can get stormwater off the system through planting trees and green streets and bioswales and eco-roofs, you can actually bring the cost down. The best example of that is a project called Tabor to the River, which basically extends from Mount Tabor to the Willamette River. They're looking at a massive pipe replacement project. Without the green infrastructure pieces, it would have cost about $140 million. With the green infrastructure, getting the stormwater off the system through these green infrastructure projects, it actually costs about $80 million. So the city actually saved $60 million. I mean, think about that number on that project by doing the kind of work that Kent is attacking.
Well, I'm thinking that he probably is also feeding into a certain kind of discontent because the swales are, I mean, we sitting in this room all love the swales, but I talked to a lot of friends who share our environmental values who are annoyed by the swales because they're taking away parking. And I had a funny knee-jerk experience. My band plays monthly at this club at 7th and Southeast Clay, and we've been playing there for a couple of years now. And the last time I went to the gig, and I was going to park on Clay, and where I used to park is they're building a swale. And I had this thought. At first, I'm thinking, like, why is there so little parking? Oh, they're building the swale. Oh, isn't that wonderful? But I was thinking about this other really good friend of mine who would have gone, that damn swale is in the way. I wish I want that parking space. So I just wonder if there's also a certain amount of discomfort with this transformation because people don't like change and they don't like to lose their parking spaces. And if that's also ways that the proponents of this initiative are feeding into discontent about BES.
Well, without a doubt. I will say, however, that the first curb bump outs that went on and went in Northeast Siskiyou, all the neighborhoods surrounding that bioswale were coming to the city wanting to know how they could get their own because it actually added, it was aesthetically pleasing to the neighborhood, and it actually was traffic calming as well. So there are a lot more people out there who like those swales, I bet, than folks have concerns. But you're absolutely right. I want to get to the rates because the message that the proponents have for this measure is very simple. We're going to lower your rates. That's baloney. The rates will increase without a doubt. If you read the City Club report, if you read any analysis of this measure, all of them, unfortunately, they hedge a bit by saying the rates may go up, the rates will probably go up. They will go up. It's illogical to think that you take two bureaus from the city, create a new layer of government, right? And the money that will go into actually just making that transition will lower your rates. It's ridiculous. The rates are driven by fixed costs. I think most of your listeners would agree taking our crap out of the Willamette River was a good thing to do. The city spent $1.44 billion to build the big pipe. And by the way, the big pipe was sized correctly. Some people argue that they didn't size the pipe correctly. They did. The city of Portland was very progressive in how it looked at building that big pipe and sizing it appropriately to be combined with the green infrastructure projects that, that Bob is referring to.
Yeah, was it criticized for being sized incorrectly because it was sized too small?
Because people don't understand what the city did. They sized the pipe, combining green infrastructure with the size of the pipe. The less the diameter of that pipe, the less it cost the ratepayers. All right, so they were saving ratepayers money by doing that. And additionally, as in Bob's example with Tabor to the River, they're saving by combining gray and green infrastructure. 49.8% of the sewer bill is going to paying the debt on that pipe. It doesn't matter who oversees the Bureau. That money, that cost is not going to go away. Your rates are not going to go down. They will go up, absolutely.
Well, the Oregonian keeps printing the fact that Portland has the third highest water rates in the country. First of all, is that true?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't have the third highest water rates. It has a high combined rate, which is the water, the sewer, and the storm water. And that's something that's very confusing for people because people think it's all the water bill. It all comes on the same bill, but there are three different rates you're paying. Portland actually has a fairly reasonable water bill. It's the sewer rates that are high because of the big pipe right now. Portland was one of the first cities out of the gate to do a big pipe. They were very proactive. They got sued, but they settled and agreed to do it. Other cities have waited longer, and they're paying much, much more than Portland paid. Some of them are paying $4 and $5 billion to do the same types of projects. And so what you're seeing very quickly is that Portland is dropping rapidly down the list, and cities are passing Portland in terms of their combined sewer rates. And there are now reports out. One just came out from the Citizens Utility Board of Oregon, which is an independent overseer of these types of utilities, that says that actually Portland is experiencing something that's very common across the United States. Cities are all going up that have these kinds of challenges with 100-year-old systems, combined sewer overflows, and that Portland is not disproportionate to those other cities. And we're going to see Portland drop back in the pack as those other cities deal with their liabilities. But to go back to what Mike was saying, in terms of rates going up, there is not a single thing in this measure, not a single thing that says it will lower rates. There's nothing in there to do that. But think about the fact it is an extra layer of government. It puts the city's bond rating at risk. The city has a very, very good bond rating for both of these utilities. Pulling them out of the city jeopardizes those, and several reports have identified that, including the Portland Business Alliance and the City Club and others. There's no auditor. The city auditor is removed from this process under this initiative. The city auditor is removed. They would go find other auditors. But the city auditor is a very, very important function for accountability. That is explicitly eliminated. The city would have to pay for the cost of off-year elections. This would require the city to have off-year elections to elect representatives to this district. It would happen in off years. The city would have to pay for that. So there's a tremendous amount of risk in this that has not been dealt with. And I think one of the most interesting things about this is while the proponents are willing to put up lawn signs saying it will lower your rates, they never actually did any analysis. They haven't provided one page of analysis to actually show how or why this would decrease rates. If you're really about fiscal accountability, you'd think they would have at least done some kind of report to show that this would actually save us money. They didn't bother to do that. They just printed lawn signs instead.
Well, they also have left out a pretty good chunk of Portlanders who are unable to vote on this because they tied the districts for this new board to the Portland school district boundaries. And they didn't realize that not everybody who's affected by these bureaus live in the Portland school district boundaries. So that's another screw up in the initiative itself.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking this morning about ballot measure 26156, which is going to be on the Portland ballot in a couple weeks when you get your ballots. And it's a measure that would remove Portland's bureaus of water and environmental services from city control and have them run by a new elected board. And we're joined this morning by Mike Houck, who's with the Urban Green Spaces Institute, and Bob Salinger with Portland Audubon, to talk about why they think this is a really bad idea. Well, in the remaining minutes, I want to first of all get back to the lawn signs, because as I'm driving around town, I see a handful of lawn signs supporting this measure and none opposing it. And is it that the opponents are so sure of themselves that they don't need the lawn signs, or is there some other strategy going on?
Well, I've been putting a lot of lawn signs up. I know that.
I've been seeing the opposite. But, one thing to remember that I think is fascinating about this whole initiative is that the opponents campaign really didn't get started until a month and a half ago or so when it made the ballot. These folks had years to put this thing together. They had a six-month head start in terms of the campaign. And yet, they don't seem to have any supporters, really. I mean, they have a handful of people out there, but not a single community group. Not a single community group has endorsed it in the last 7 months. That's astounding. You know, again, Friends of the Reservoirs went behind closed doors with these industrial interests and formulated it because they were frustrated about the reservoir, and it's a real shame that they allowed their cause to be co-opted. But other than that, nobody has come on board. And I think when you look at the list of groups opposing it, it's fairly astounding. You have groups that fought for Bull Run, like Oregon Wild and Sierra Club and BARC and the Sandy River Watershed Council. You have groups that fight for social justice, like the Coalition for a Livable Future, Coalition of Communities of Color, Opal Environmental Justice. You have East Portland Action Plan opposing it because they're concerned that they were completely left off of this because of the way it was drawn. They won't have any representation. Street Roots, same thing. You have groups concerned with the elderly, Elders in Action, for example, and a couple others that are opposing this. You have all the labor organizations opposing this. And now, increasingly, you have businesses coming on board, too. They're late to the game. I think they were playing it both ways to kind of see how it turned out. But I think as the analysis has come out over and over again, whether it's City Club or the League of Women Voters or the Portland Business Alliance, what they're realizing is that this would just be disastrous for our economy, too. They're all concluding that likely costs would go up. There would be tremendous confusion, litigation. Anybody seeking a permit now to do major development would have to go through two different governmental agencies at a time that we've been trying to consolidate that and coordinate it and streamline it. So I think even businesses are now realizing that this is just going to be a disaster for the community.
Well, I'm thinking again about this kind of concern that it's masquerading as a grassroots populist movement. When people were out on Hawthorne Boulevard, which is basically, by the way, where I saw the lawn signs, interesting, was around the reservoirs in Mount Tabor and a little bit on 39th Street over by Fred Meyers. Right. And that's the only places I've seen them. And I haven't seen, and I guess I'm not in your part of town.
Come to my neighborhood in North Portland, Northeast Portland, and you'll find
them. I'll have to start spending more time in Northeast Portland to see what's happening there. But I was talking to somebody who was gathering signatures back when it was getting on the ballot, and he handed me the signature. I said, I'm opposed to this. I don't want to sign it. This is going to privatize the Water Bureau. And he looked at me and says, no, this is to fight privatization. So I tried to explain to him who was behind it. And you know, he's like this kind of young hippie-looking guy. And I don't know if I made a full impression on him. I'm not sure how much he was being paid to gather signatures. But I did feel like there was a disconnect for him between what he'd been told and what I was telling him. And he didn't seem to have any way to get the information. So I'm wondering, are you concerned that there's a number of people who still believe this is a great populist movement? And how do you reach them and get the message out?
Well, that's one reason we're here, frankly. I'm very concerned. I led a field trip yesterday to Oxbottom Wildlife Refuge for people, actually Audubon Society Portland members. And when they saw the lawn signs that I had, they said, well, I was thinking of voting for that. I wasn't quite sure. Maybe I won't vote for it. After we spent 5 or 10 minutes talking about the specifics, then they understood how bad this was. But yeah, there's a huge amount of confusion out there. I hope folks who really are confused and don't know what's going on will do the right thing and just vote no, because it makes no sense to vote yes on something you don't understand. And there's huge confusion out there.
Yeah, and let's be blunt. They bought their way onto the ballot. I mean, they spent a fortune getting signatures. They were frantic. They went right up to basically the last day. Siltronic spent $50,000 to purchase those signatures, and Harry Merlot spent, I believe, close to 35 or 40 at that point. They've since gone up. Now Siltronic's up at 80,000. So they had two major corporate backers. Again, two of the worst corporate entities in the state, in my opinion. Harry, when he was with when he was logging our forests, Siltronic, Superfund polluter, that literally paid for those signatures and hired a bunch of folks that went out there who didn't have a clue what they were
representing. Well, who lied?
And who lied? there's a lot of folks had interesting conversations with them. And they got on the ballot. But we are concerned because there is a lot of confusion out there. There's a lot of frustration. But it's important that people think about how that frustration has been used and abused across the country. It's fine to be frustrated. You know, if you're an environmentalist and you're not frustrated, you're not paying attention right now. I get it. Mike gets it. We all get it. But the solution is not to get so frustrated that you become apathetic and just say, to hell with it, we're going to turn our utilities and, again, our environmental bureau, a bureau that's done incredible things for our communities, over to a bunch of corporate polluters and let them try and figure it out. That's the equivalent of just saying, we're going to blow everything up and hope it comes down in a better place. Some people tell you we have nothing to lose. We have a lot to lose. This is one of the greenest cities in the United States. We've done some amazing work here. We have some real challenges ahead. This is not a solution.
Well, the irony is I sat on the advisory committee for the Big Pipe in 1990, so 24 years ago. We were debating how the city would move forward to address the combined sewer overflows, which is putting our crap into the Willamette River. And right now, we've dealt with that issue in the Columbia Slough and the Willamette River. We argued with EPA at the time and Department of Environmental Quality, and I'll tell you exactly why we had an argument with them. I was advocating for stretching that program out another 10 to 15 years. The reason behind that was that it would keep the rates lower, and we'd be able to capture more money for green infrastructure projects. EPA and DEQ turned us down. So the city went forward. They did the project on time, under budget. Now, if you go to EPA's website, Portland is listed as touted as the leader in the United States on green infrastructure and taking and using alternative means to address stormwater issues 24 years later. We're grateful for that, and the city deserves that praise.
Well, one last thing. What do you think about the Oregonians' endorsement for your position, their disendorsement of this initiative?
I would just say even the Oregonians figured it out.
In spite of their tabloid format.
In spite of their tabloid format.
Right.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, I mean, again, I don't mean a broken record here, but every single group, every paper so far, whether we're talking about environmental groups, labor groups, social justice groups, business groups, just a huge array of organizations, almost unprecedented, has looked at this. And for a variety of reasons, decided this is bad news. This is a bad idea. This is bad for our communities. Nobody has taken a hard look at this and actually said this is a good idea. And so, you know, I think at the end of the day, my hope is that people will look at what this initiative does and doesn't do. We'll look at these groups that have worked with the community for years, decades, in the case of Audubon, for a century, to improve the health of our neighborhoods and our environment, worked hand in hand. We have an amazing track record of helping protect the environment in our neighborhoods. And then look at who's behind this and what they have to gain. And I think becomes very clear as to what we need to do.
Well, I want to thank you, Bob and Mike, for joining us today and giving us some, I think, very important information about this initiative. Your ballots will be, I think, being delivered to your mailbox in the next week or so. And the election is, I believe, what, the third Tuesday in May?
May 20th.
Right. So be right at the end of our pledge drive. So thanks for joining us. And maybe next time I have you on, we can talk about the Eagles in Oaks Bottom or something.
Would be a pleasure.
A little more productive. Okay. Thanks for joining us. And listening this morning. We've been talking with Bob Salinger with the Audubon Society of Portland and Mike Houck with Urban Green Spaces Institute. And you've been listening to Locust Focus here on KBOO Community Radio. If you're just tuning in and you'd like to hear what you missed or you want your friends or family to hear this show, you can listen to it online or download the audio later this afternoon on our website, kboo.fm/locustfocus. Next week, my guest will be Anuradha Mittal with the Oakland Institute to talk about the World Bank's rampant theft of land and resources for some of the world's poorest people. My engineer is Joe Clement. I'm Barbara Bernstein. We're going to go out with some music by Van Morrison. Thanks for listening.
I'm out from the county fair and the rain came pouring down. Me and Billy standing there with a silver half a crown. Had the full up fishing rod and the tackle on our backs. We just stood there getting wet with our backs against the fence. Oh, the water. Oh, the water. Oh, the water. Hope it don't rain all day.
There's a better world that's a-coming, don't you see? There's a better world that's a-coming, don't you see?
As we approach International Workers' Day in 2014, this May 1st, we find ourselves facing unprecedented cuts to public services, including education, street and park maintenance, social services, unemployment insurance, and much more. As a result, we are seeing a rapid increase in symptoms of poverty, including houselessness and food insecurity. Along with all of this, we continue to experience attacks on people of color, immigrants, working families, women, students, and our right to organize. Our response to this onslaught against humanity is to organize and fight back. Join us this May 1st for a rally in the South Park blocks of downtown Portland at 3 p.m., followed by a march from 4 to 5:30 p.m.
There's a better world a-coming, don't you see, see, see. Better world a-coming, don't you see. When we'll all be union and we'll all be free. There's a better world a-coming, don't you see.
KABU at the Clinton, every second Thursday at 7 p.m. This month, KABU is proud to show the documentary Queen of the Sun, What Are the Bees Telling Us? The film is an alternative look at the global bee crisis. Before the film will be a short discussion with bee experts on how to help save the bees. That's Thursday, May 8th, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 11 o'clock. Up next is Health Watch with host Dr. David Naiman. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Redirect Guide, committed to promoting progressive regional businesses based on the values of sustainability, localism, and social justice. Complete business directory and resource guide at redirectguide.com.
The purpose of this program is not to prescribe a treatment to individuals. Listeners should consult their healthcare practitioner before attempting any treatment.
Good morning and welcome to Health Watch. I'm Dr. David Naiman, your host. There is established medical evidence that some people with cancer, against the odds, have a spontaneous remission. But despite the evidence of this rare occurrence, today's guest, Dr. Kelly Turner, was shocked to learn that nobody was studying these cases of people who had recovered against all odds. Dr. Turner therefore focused her dissertation research at the University of California.